Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast. Today we're going to talk about the ITV whistleblower. So if you haven't heard of the story, an anonymous whistleblower, who was a serving SEND worker at English Council, claimed that senior managers had joked about denying support to children and wanted to deny even more. She talked about the tactics she described caseworkers being encouraged to use were leaving phone numbers off emails so parents couldn't ring back, ignoring the first question in a parent's email and only answering the second, avoiding face-to-face meetings, not leaving a paper trail, told not to put objections in writing in case of freedom of information requests, using Teams chats and back channels they believed wouldn't show up in a subject access request. So her conclusion was that it's deliberate and it's about money because delays save the council money even when they know they'll lose. So we wanted to talk about this because it's been huge in the SEND community and the overwhelming response wasn't shock.
No, I was going to say, I'd like to say that I was shocked, but actually it was more like confirmation, because I think a lot of parents and carers out there feel like this is going on in every council. And I think a lot of them, when they heard this story, they thought, well, it must be mine.
Yes, exactly. And that says a lot, doesn't it? The fact that we've not been surprised by this.
We've heard similar stories 100%. And we've experienced similar things ourselves too.
I remember my first experience with the council was when I was trying to get provision for my son. And I remember ringing and leaving messages and sending emails and just none of it being answered, none of it. And it was the most frustrating response. But I remember the sense of that you are being pushed off, you are being delayed, this is being delayed. And we've had conversations and we knew full well, we worked it out that if you save a term's worth of fees, that's thousands of pounds, it's a deliberate tactic. So when the whistleblower said this, as you said, it wasn't surprise, was it? It was confirmation of what we all already know.
Yeah, and I think it's not just about directly having similar responses. It's the energy that you get from these people when you speak to them or when you attend meetings with them. It always felt a bit icky.
Yeah, you get the sense that you are a pain to them. They don't have to say it, you know. And I think that's why so many people that I have known who have done SARS reports, it's just confirmed what they thought, that they were saying horrible things behind their backs about them and their children.
And I know I've been in meetings where I've been in tears and then felt really stupid and then felt like perhaps they weren't really taking me seriously and I was just being an over-emotional mother. And the fact that I'm feeling that, and that it just makes you think, well, maybe, you know, I'm feeling it for a reason.
Yeah.
So leaving phone numbers off emails, I think, is pretty standard. Although we did have a phone number because I did make lots of phone calls, because I think I stopped emailing because I wasn't getting responses. And actually, another thing was there were so many out of office responses. Did you?
Yes, out of office responses. Absolutely. Like out of office was on so much of the time. I think the original provision lead that we had, it was on most of the week.
It often said they were on holiday or off sick. And it made me wonder, is that genuine or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I remember, I've been missed an annual review that one of my children's placements was actually running out and nobody had picked this up. And I needed confirmation, was the placement actually ending, or had anything been done to extend the funding? Because the funding had been given, say, for I think it was 2 years, and we'd had the annual review, and it had not been flagged in any way that something needed to happen. And so I was quite panicked at that time, trying to work out if they would still have a placement in a month or so. And when I called the office, I was told, oh, well, everyone's now on Easter holidays. Everyone? Because I wonder what kind of businesses operate like this where everyone's off. And I was just told there wouldn't be a response and I needed to get back in touch after the Easter holidays. So basically, a whole council office shuts down. I think what I'm saying is it's that doubt, isn't there, that this is the truth? Is this just fobbing you off for another couple of weeks?
Yeah. Another thing we had was at that really sort of stressful time when mainstream school really wasn't working and it was apparent that something else needed to be put in place, like alternative provision. When those meetings were happening, so it was like the TAF meetings at school, they were bringing in the council, and in order to move things forward, you all had to work together. And we did have a social worker at the time as well. And we had several meetings where the council representatives didn't come. They just didn't turn up and they were expected to. And that meant more delays. And then you missed the panel meetings that they need to go to and all of that.
We had that too with the inclusion officer really being needed. When one of my children's school placements was about to run out, and the inclusion officer was really needed to move the next steps. And I remember being there, and the head teacher of the school fuming, and she was actually trying to get hold of the inclusion officer, and it all had to be rescheduled. And then you missed the slot for the panel meeting because, certainly, where we live, the panel meetings are always booked up. So it's not like, oh, the next panel meeting is you can just go in 2 weeks. It might be a good way. And if you, again, you're pushing towards summer holidays, you're running out of dates. I definitely think avoiding face-to-face meetings is a tactic that's used with some parents. I've had that with schools as well. I have a chain of emails where I'm requesting a meeting and it's just ignored. To be clear, though, that was with a school, not with someone.
Heard of that from another parent as well, requesting to see Senko at the school and just not being responded to.
Yeah. Not leaving a paper trail for sure. I generally think this is a tactic that's used when dealing with some parents. This could be schools or the council. I've not experienced this with our council, but I have with one of my children's schools where I was phoned by one of them and suggested homeschooling. So again, not an it was weird to get a phone call rather than an email because most of our conversations were via email. I think what happens to you is that you become so much sharper. I used to be a lot more trusting, and I know we've talked about this, but at the beginning of the journey, it changes who you are because you are aware that people are waiting to screw your child over, basically. That's how you feel. And you have to be really on it, and you have to be making sure that you are covering your back all the time.
Yeah, I remember as well as at that similar period where the mainstream school was completely breaking down, we had a social worker involved and she had been to a meeting. And I remember it was my son's birthday, and I got a call to say, amazing news. He's got a school place. This place has got an inclusion base. He's going to go there. It's going to be brilliant. And I thought, wow, someone's like swooped in and saved the day, and it's all going to be okay. And then only to be told a few weeks later, well, that was wrong.
I remember that. I still am puzzled. How can you be told your child has a place at a school and it's all okay, something you've been waiting for, to then hear no more for weeks and then, oh no, that wasn't right. Was it never right?
And not only that, but then the social worker left.
That's right.
And then we had to start from square one. So I remember I went to visit that school and we looked round. And then they came back to say they didn't have a place for him. And that this is over the space of a few months. So, you know, your hopes are high, dashed. Then
Yeah.
there's still a glimmer of hope that maybe it could happen and maybe that will help. And then no. And then it wasn't really until I thought, right, I have to make this happen. no one is going to come and save the day because there isn't anyone, or they keep leaving. We went through so many social workers who just didn't stay in their roles for long. And it was only when I phoned the council and said, my son is not coming back to this school in September, that they started listening to me. I think they started taking me seriously then.
Yeah, but it takes a lot out of you.
Yes. And then there was also, again, around that same time, we were looking at alternative provision. And I think this was a real turning point for me, was when I realised I couldn't trust what the council was saying, because they had told us they had been out to consultation with a number of alternative provisions. What they didn't know is I had also done my own research. So I had found three possible places I'd been in direct contact with them. We had visited one, met them, they met my son. They told us they could offer him one day a week. The council came to a meeting and said they had consulted with, I think it was five or six places, and unfortunately, none of them could offer him a place. And on that list were some that I had directly spoken to who said they could. And so in that meeting, I told them so. And they were not very happy, kind of backtracking.
I was just going to say, how did they respond to that?
Oh, really? Oh, it was a bit like that, really. And they said, oh, we'll try again then.
Like you'd even tried.
And the one that we visited, I got in touch with them after that and said, they said they've consulted with you. Have you received anything? And they said, we don't think so, but we'll go and double check. And then they checked and they hadn't had anything.
So they just fully made it up and come to the meeting. And again, yeah, if you'd accepted that, if you hadn't done your own homework,
I would have just believed them, wouldn't I?
Yeah. And that saves them a lot of money. It's a good, well, I suppose there's the effort of having to actually ring them and it was sorted
it's
out.
The time, isn't
the
it?
Time. So there's the time and there's the money. You can see clearly the motivation. So again, these are things that we've come across and things that we've put together. Okay, we get why this is happening. But I think the whistleblower coming out and saying it has just clarified what send parents know is happening.
Yeah. And it actually does make you feel a bit sick, doesn't it?
It's about children, and it's the damage that it does to these children when they're in the wrong places, and they're just, people are deliberately making sure that their needs aren't met. It's a really, really horrible feeling
about it too. I mean, that is just disgusting.
That's fully sick. And I do think that just getting that energy that you were talking about is why so many parents do end up doing SARS and then end up reading what they really have said.
It's very cold, isn't it? When you think the children that they're dealing with are very, very broken mentally. They're just not coping. They're breaking down. Their families.
And all this delaying is pushing them to that absolute full breaking point. It's like there can be no help until you've actually got to that point. We're really going to push it off that far. And we don't really care about it either, but it saves us a lot of money and a lot of time, a lot of effort.
But what are they also thinking about us? What do you think? They think we do this for fun?
I do think that one of my friends said that she reminded them that when she had her child, this was not the path that she envisaged for her child. These struggles, she wasn't coming to this meeting just for fun.
No, you know, there's stuff in the press about there's no naughty children.
There's obviously a deliberate rhetoric in the press. You can see it with the headlines. It's attacking diagnosis. I think it's a very deliberate campaign to turn public opinion about diagnosis. And it's taking away from people who have real difficulties and taking away the support, which again, doesn't it come back to saving a whole ton of money if you do that? So what's the motivation again? I think it's worth noting as well that when we're talking about this behaviour with the council, that so many families are pushed to going to tribunal, which how stressful is that? And the numbers just speak volumes. 98 to 99% of send tribunal appeals are decided in the family's favour, or the council concedes before the hearing. It's like you're not even going to be taken seriously unless you push for that. And then we know how far away these tribunal dates are. So even if the council know that they're going to lose, they're going to save all this money, aren't they, by making a family go to tribunal? I don't know. Is it 12 months? It could be even more than that
It's
in our
long now,
area.
isn't it? Yeah.
It's a long time. But you think a school placement, perhaps, you're saving thousands of pounds.
I'll tell you another thing you've just reminded me. We were on the list for tribunal, and it actually got sorted out before we had to get to that point, but we had a date, and the council failed to let the tribunal know that we didn't need the date anymore, which was their responsibility, not ours. And they were really cross because obviously they've set it all up. I think they let them know, but really late. And what impact did that have for another family that could have had that slot?
We also had a tribunal date for the first of my children to go through this process. And another parent did say to me, it's almost that they won't take you seriously until you show that you're going to go all the way. And again, it was agreed before tribunal. If councils were making lawful decisions, they wouldn't be losing almost every single time. And that's another reason why tribunals should be protected. So, the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, called the alleged behaviour completely unacceptable and said that councils will be held to account. Now, I'd like to know how.
That's exactly what I was going to
Because,
say. How, Bridget? How?
again, this isn't news to us. And I think so much consultation has been done in respect of the SEM reforms. They have this information from families. I suppose, will it be taken any more seriously now ITV have put it in the spotlight? But honestly, I doubt it.
No, I think they'll probably just look at being more clever about hiding the behaviours.
But it does feed into the SEN reform debate even further, because if this is what councils are behaving like with legal duties in place, can you imagine what would happen with weaker ones?
It's so scary.
ISP decisions can't be appealed to tribunal under the proposals. Only SPP and EHCP threshold decisions can. So, what can we do when we're dealing with this? What have we learned over time that's helpful?
Put everything in writing. Every phone call, every conversation, follow up with an email summarizing it. Keep your own notes.
Yeah, 100% keep your own notes. Something that I now do that I didn't, that a friend of mine told me to do, but I really thought, oh, so that sounds like overkill, was to copy in all the professionals working with your child into the email. Because I was in a situation with a school and clearly the placement had broken down. They decided not to make any further accommodations and they were ignoring all my emails requests for calls. And yet, when we were going to have an emergency annual review, they denied that that was the case in a pre-meeting with the council that I was not invited to, unaware of until the meeting. And it made me realize that actually, if I'd copied in all the professionals, there would have been no doubt as to what was going on. So that would be my tip. Maybe we need to be numbering our questions and emails so none can be quietly ignored.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Never accept a verbal no. Ask for refusals in writing with reasons and the legal basis.
Keep a dated log of all contact. So just a simple notebook or your notes app in your phone can be really helpful.
Yeah, and know that if you do need to go to tribunal, don't be afraid of that. The odds are hugely in your favour. Exhaustion is the tactic that they're going for, so don't let them win. There's lots of help out there as well. You can look at IPSI, Sendyas.
And Special Needs Jungle, they've covered this story in depth on their page.
Absolutely. And I think, in terms of a final thought, you were never imagining it. You were never being difficult. And now the country has heard it from the inside.
Thank you for listening. Please do share any of your stories. We'd love to know what your experiences are with this.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.